right, Hackers fans, welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caribou, joined by our live blog director, Jamie Snowden. We're talking some Packers football. We're getting ready for Green Bay Packers training camp practice. It's underway. We are supposed to have joining us former Green Bay Packers offensive lineman Tony Mandrich joining us on the show. I just tried calling him before the show started, having a little bit of problems connecting with him right now. He lives out on the West Coast, out in Scottsdale, Arizona. It's rather early out there, 6:30 a.m. I left our phone number. He's free to call in. I can certainly understand at this time of day if he's getting, you know, he has a family, if getting the kids settled, getting breakfast in the morning. Hopefully he'll call back, and I'll try once more. I know we've been pushing this interview, so I really want to get him on the line and talk to him. Hopefully we'll be able to connect shortly. So just hang tight, hang with us. I promise we will try to get him. For the moment being, though, training camp practice day 4 in Green Bay is taking place as we speak. This has been our first episode of Railbird Central since training camp opened. We did not have an episode on Monday. I was there live, got to see a couple things, which was really exciting. Seeing the guys in pads for the first time on Monday. This is only the second time they practice in pads here now on Wednesday, following a mandated NFL day off. The NFL, I'm not sure what the language is, but maybe it's after your first 3 consecutive practices, you have to have a day off. They want to ease players back into the rigors of a long NFL season, but back in action today. And while we're waiting here, and this is also our offensive line preview episode here at Railbird Central that we'll get to in a moment later in the episode. But, just reacting to some of the news coming out at the outset of practice here. Mike Neal is practicing today for the first time. He opened up training camp on the physically unable to perform or PUP list. Has to do with his abdomen, his core. Same issue. He dealt with these issues last year, but fought through them. I think they're just taking their time, taking it easy with him and making sure nothing was all that bad with Mike Neal. I know he's missed a lot of time over the course of his career with injury, but remember, this is a guy who played all 16 games last season and fought through the same injury pretty much all last year. He would miss a lot of practice time last year, 2013, ended up playing in a lot of games and played a lot of snaps for the Packers. So I think as it works, their NFL players are mandated the first 2 practices without pads. I think Mike Neal is not in pads today while the rest of the team is. I think he just has to, he has to be eased back into it for his first 2 practices. So I think it's coming, by the end of the week, hopefully by family night, we'll see Mike Neal in pads. It's not the worst thing in the world that he missed 3 practices. I mean, he hasn't missed anything yet, really, for a guy who's been around the league for, 5 previous years. Mike Neal knows what's going on. The fact that he's, missed 3 practices means very little to me. I wouldn't want to see him miss a whole lot more. Any player, I don't want to see him miss any practice time. But at least these veteran guys, it's not the biggest thing. That haven't even missed a preseason game, let alone a regular season one. Haven't even missed a preseason game yet. So, Good to see Mike Neal coming back. Excited to see what he brings to the outside linebacker position. Word is he's lost a lot of weight, down to 263. I mean, this is a guy, according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and reporter Bob McGinn, this is a guy who at one time weighed more than 300 pounds, Mike Neal. So, I mean, this is quite a transformation for him. Be interesting to see how he fits in at a position that includes Clay Matthews, Julius Peppers, Nick Perry when he gets healthy. Apparently, Nick Perry still out today, has not returned to practice, still on the PUP list while Mike Neal came off the PUP list, it appears. Other news coming out of Green Bay, Jamari Lattimore has returned from illness. He missed the last two practices, I think. Practice and a half, maybe only. I don't remember if he dropped out or what he did that second day of training camp. But anyway, Jamari Lattimore is back. He had a stomach illness, I think Mike McCarthy described it as. Hasn't missed much time. He was actually participated in the first training camp practice. So no big deal there. Unfortunate that Jeff Janis, who also apparently has an illness, has yet to practice now, his fourth day he's missing. You would think, I mean, just being an illness, that wouldn't be something that he'd miss so much time, but apparently he has. So not exactly sure what's going on there with Jeff Janis. The Packers organization or Mike McCarthy has not said anything other than just saying he has an illness, has not described what it is. You know, it makes you think a little bit about what Terrell Manning, former Packers linebacker, had, what, two seasons ago, had colitis during training camp, lost a lot of weight, was a rather serious condition that a lot of people didn't know about till after it happened, and really impacted his time early in training camp. I'm not saying that's what Jeff Janis has, but the fact that he's missing a little bit more time than perhaps expected makes you wonder if this is a little more serious than perhaps anticipated. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe Jeff Janis comes back and he's back by family night, and that would be great. Being a rookie, he's the guy you don't want to see missing that much time. You know, if any of these guys, I mean, you know, Mike Neal and Latroy Guillon miss a little bit of time, well, big deal. I mean, these guys have been around the league for 5+ years. Missing a few practices isn't going to hurt. But for a rookie, for a first-year player, yeah, it is going to hurt a little bit. Jeff Janis doesn't want to miss a whole lot more. At least with Janis, he was totally absent from the first two Packers practices. It wasn't just a case where he is ill. It appeared they wanted to quarantine him. I can only assume, and you know, I don't know if he has some sort of something like the flu that could be transmitted to the rest of the team. That's what it seems like when they say illness to me. But he at least came back and observed practice on Wednesday. He was there. He could at least take the mental reps. You know, he's at least learning the Packers offense and seeing what's going on. Glad that he at least made that step and he's back. Now he's got to get on the field and take the physical reps in addition to the mental reps. So hopefully Jeff Janis comes back soon. But as far as we know, Latroy Guillon, Jarrell Worthy, Nick Perry, still not practicing. Those in addition to Jeff Janis, don't know when they're going to be back. Mike McCarthy has said Nick Perry is quote unquote close. What exactly that means, not sure. Cause it's been since the, you know, he said that the first day of training camp practice, now it's day four. It's close is a relative term, I guess. It wasn't like he would be back the next day. He wasn't that close. Nick Perry still remains out. You know, again here, Nick Perry has had a disappointing start to his career. But entering his third year, it's not the biggest deal if he misses the first week. I want him to get back as soon as possible. A guy who needs development, really needs to be out there, like Nick Perry. We'll see how it all plays out. But, today is the offensive line preview day here at Railbird Central. And appropriate, the day we're supposed to talk to former Packers offensive lineman Tony Mandrich. And again, I'll try calling him a little bit later, but just hang with us. But let's go through the Packers offensive line as we make our way position by position as training camp opens here in Green Bay. We've already done the whole rest of the offense, today's offensive line, and it looks to be a pretty good unit, as good as it's been in a long time in Green Bay, with the caveat that they fix the center position, or that they get that solidified, I guess. But let's start with the positive aspects of the offensive line. And I think the best part of the offensive line is the guards, the pair of guards the Packers have, Josh Sitton and TJ Lang. Josh Sitton, a Pro Bowler in the past, and TJ Lang, it could even be at the time where TJ Lang might have Pro Bowls coming to him. This may be the number one pair of guards in the entire NFL. I don't know if they're, I'm not going to go out on a limb and say they're number one overall, but boy, if they're not, they're in the top two or three. I have no doubt about that. Josh Sitton and TJ Lang, very solid guys who, effective in both the run game and the pass game. Last year, they kind of switched those guys around. Sitton now at left guard, TJ Lang now at right guard. It was reversed at one point, but I think entering, year two of this transition, they're only going to be more comfortable in year two. There's no reason to think that these guys shouldn't even be even better now. And what are these guys, 6-7 year veterans in the NFL? They're in the prime of their career. These guys should be having the best years of their career. And no reason to think they're not in an offense like the Packers that is now very balanced, as long as Aaron Rodgers and Eddie Lacy are healthy. And, it's a situation where the Packers should be good running the ball and passing the ball. They're going to have to keep Aaron Rodgers clean and off the ground and not, subject to sacks. But there's no reason to think Justin and TJ Lang are going to give up very many. These guys are, again, the best pair of guards in the NFL, arguably. Few more questions at the tackle position, but there is a lot of reason for optimism. After 2013, the Packers draft rookie last year, David Bakhtiari, and has a very promising season as the Packers left tackle. Starts all 16 games. Was really good in pass protection, especially considering his inexperience. Has really good feet. Little bit disappointing in the run game. You can definitely tell he's a guy who needed to hit the weight room a whole lot more. The word is he has. He's gained some strength in the offseason. That's all hearsay right now. I haven't seen the fruits of his labor yet. Hopefully, we will start to see that soon. But the Packers felt so good about David Bakhtiari's development. Last year they had planned to move Brian Bulaga to left tackle. Well, after David Bakhtiari holds down the fort, Bulaga is now back at right tackle. And, he's coming off basically a season and a half in which he's been injured. Misses the entire 2013 season with a torn ACL. The season before that, he misses about, half the season or the last quarter of the season with a fractured hip. So, he's had multiple ailments. When Brian Bulaga has been healthy, including the Super Bowl XLV, he has been very good. The Packers hope he's just back to pre-injury form, and he's in his wheelhouse at right tackle. If Brian Bulaga and David Bakhtiari are healthy, there is reason to believe these guys can be very good if Brian Bulaga recovers from injury and David Bakhtiari takes another step in his development at left tackle. Lots of reason for optimism there. Now, it's possible that we've seen David Bakhtiari is what he is, and he'll always have okay feet, but not a lot of power. Maybe it's just a case where he stagnates and doesn't improve. I don't know. I couldn't speculate as to that right now. I'm hoping to see improvement from him. There's no reason I think you shouldn't in year two, in which he's a year more experienced and hopefully better. But David Bakhtiari is only 6'4". I mean, I think you see a lot of the elite offensive tackles in the NFL being taller, 6'5", 6'6", if not 6'7". So he's a little bit short, but I mean, short isn't necessarily a bad thing. It might help him in being able to move his body, in that there's not quite so much to move around. He doesn't have quite those long limbs as some other tackles. And maybe that helps him, mirror pass rushers and things like that. Still the jury's still out on how much he can help the run game and get a push for Eddie Lacy. But hopefully he's hit the weight room. Word is he has, and we'll see if he does get indeed better in 2014. So there's the tackle positions. Now, the one question mark is center in Green Bay, and that is a position that is up for grabs. J.C. Treader is going to get the first crack at it, and if Treader doesn't do it, it'll be rookie Corey Linsley, more than likely the first-round draft pick out of Ohio State. The good news is J.C. Treader has shown no ill effects from last year's broken ankle. Missed the majority of last season, ended up coming back for about the last month of the year on the Packers' 53-man roster in 2013. Never played in a game, though. But simply good that he was able to come back and practice and learn the Packers' offense and things like that. That's invaluable. And he's only, just made progress since that time, seemingly. There's been nothing wrong with anything I've seen from J.C. Treader at training camp practice, we are only into day four here and only one day prior in pads. So still in the beginning stages of training camp here and still a lot to prove. And seeing these guys in game action, of course, will be the real test. In terms of, how good J.C. Treader is and how good Corey Linsley is, for that matter. Corey Linsley, and I wrote, my impressions from practice here at Cheesehead TV, if you're a regular reader and, had read our blog, one of my, notable takeaways from practice, and this has nothing to do with Corey Linsley's play on the field, but taking a look at just seeing him in person for the first time, Corey Linsley has the biggest arms of any Packers center I've ever seen. And we're talking franchise history here. I mean, I wasn't alive back during the Lombardi years, but I can't imagine Ken Bowman having as big as arms as Corey Linsley. His biceps are absolutely massive. Now that doesn't necessarily mean anything. A good player does not have big arms alone. There's the movement part that's, arguably just as important, if not more important. How are his feet? This is a guy who's got to be able to reach the second level and make reach blocks and things like that. He's got to be able to, protect Aaron Rodgers. And the mental part of the game is so big at the center position, in which you're kind of the director of the offensive line, calling out protections and things like that. These are all important things I haven't seen from Corey Linsley yet. But again, it's just because it's early. I more than anything, got to see these guys in game action in the preseason, see how they hold up. J.C. Treader has the inside track on the job just because he's been around for a year longer than Corey Linsley. But it's an open competition. Just because J.C. Treader's getting the first crack doesn't mean he's guaranteed the job by any means. This is wide open. Mike McCarthy mentions Garth Gerhardt is getting a chance. Garth Gerhardt has spent the better part of the past two seasons on the Packers practice squad. He's kind of third in the pecking order on the depth chart. I wouldn't say he stands a very good chance, but I suppose we can't rule him out right now of being perhaps the Packers center. But just from the fact that he's third and the fact he's only been a practice squad player. But none of these guys have taken a regular season snap in the NFL. Gerhardt's taken a few preseason snaps. That's as much as he's done. With the rest of the guys, Treader didn't play at all last season, even the preseason. He's coming from the Ivy League. That'll be a big transition to the NFL. Corey Linsley's in his rookie year, still has a lot to learn. So, there's a lot of uncertainty here. But, the silver lining, I guess, is the Packers don't need all three of these guys to be studs. They just need to find one of them to be solid and hopefully have one with potential that'll improve. If they can find that, that would, and if they have two options, if both J.C. Treader and Corey Linsley turn out to be good, well, great. Then the Packers have some depth on top of being a starter. Let's hope they find at least one of these guys being solid and something they can find the long-term solution at the center position, because they're going to their fourth starter in 4 years at center following Scott Wells, Jeff Saturday, and Evan Dietrich Smith, now on their fourth opening day starter at the center position in Green Bay. We'll see how it all works out. Getting to the backups, Don Barclay, kind of considered maybe the sixth offensive lineman. He doesn't have, maybe the exclusive rights to that title, I suppose. Derek Sherrod will have his say, but Don Barclay kind of looks like he'll be the top backup at both guard positions and the right tackle position. So three spots on the offensive line, Don Barclay kind of looks like he's the top backup. If anything happens and early in training camp, TJ Lang's been kind of battling a shoulder injury. He's been limited. Doesn't sound like anything serious, but they're just being cautious with him and kind of playing Don Barclay in his place. Barclay can play, in addition to being the top backup at three positions, he can play left tackle in a pinch. He can even be an emergency center in a pinch. He's that valuable. A guy who's been starting a lot of games for the Packers while Brian Bulaga has been out injured. So Don Barclay, he's got practically his roster spot is guaranteed. Now, Marshall Newhouse, it kind of in a make or break situation here. And the good news is this is the first training camp he's participated in a long time since he suffered that, horrific broken leg, both the tibia and the fibula broken in 2011, December 2011. So, the simple fact that he's taking part in training camp is very good news. Has a lot to prove yet, but everything's been positive so far. And he's, for the time being, the top backup at left tackle. Hopefully he can be kind of a swing tackle in which, he could be a right tackle if needed. I think they're just, don't want to put a lot on his plate, though. But, here's a former first-round draft pick that the organization was high on at one point. And so they're hoping, Derek Sherrod is ready to make a comeback here and get back and be a part of things. You know, I don't plan on him being a starter, but hey, if he finally gets healthy, a la Mike Flanagan, who came back from a horrific broken leg years ago to play at a Pro Bowl level, maybe Derek Sherrod can do that too. At least that's what the Packers are hoping. At 9 o'clock here, I'm going to pause in our offensive line preview here. I'm going to try Tony Mandrich calling him once again. I just got voicemail before. I've been communicating with him. He knows about this. Hopefully it's just a case where it was early in the morning and we can still catch him here. So hang with me, folks. I'm going to try catching Tony Mandrich on the line here, and we'll be right back, hopefully, with him as a guest. Welcome back to Railbird Central here at Cheesehead TV. And yes, joining us on the phone right now, we have former Packers offensive lineman, former first-round draft choice, the number 2 overall pick in the 1989 draft, Tony Mandrich. Mr. Mandrich, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for taking the time to talk to us. You're coming to us from Scottsdale, Arizona, so I know it's early out there, an early wake-up call, but I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. Now, Mr. Mandrich, you've been very open, honest, and candid about your past, your use of steroids, addiction to painkillers, things you've already admitted in past interviews with the media. And seeing as you're such an open book, being a Green Bay Packers show, there's a few things I wanted to ask about your time in Green Bay. Starting with, you've said you didn't want to play in Green Bay. And I guess I want to know where that came from. I mean, I have a couple guesses into maybe it was the drugs talking. Maybe it was become you came from a program at neighboring Michigan whose rival was Wisconsin, or maybe the Packers were just kind of plain old poor at the time. You know, why didn't you want to play in Green Bay?
Well, you know, I think the biggest part was, you know, immaturity on my part. And at that time I was getting a lot of hype, and I wanted to play in a big market, meaning, you know, a big metropolitan market, whether it was New York, L.A., Chicago, somewhere where endorsements and, you know, more opportunities would be offered just for the plain fact of being in an area like that. You know, what I didn't do was take a step back and see that I had an opportunity to play for probably one of the greatest teams with the greatest traditions in the NFL. And, you know, whether you're in a small market, physically, population and demographic wise, the opportunities would have been just as great, but it was my bad attitude, you know, and the way I looked at it, that shaped, you know, statements like I had said.
I believe it was 2008 when you released your book. You also talked to, you know, kind of high profile interviews on ESPN and Showtime's Inside the NFL. Why did it take until 2008 to kind of go public with your past?
I think that I had tried to get some publishers to get the book out in 2000 and early 2000, 2000 or 2001, because I retired from Indianapolis in 99. The name was still common and used for stories, and it was because I just left the NFL. The problem was some of these big publishing houses, they wanted me to throw people under the bus, and because obviously it creates controversy and it sells more books.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my motivation was, you know, I want to tell a story. I want to tell my story. I want to talk about my mistakes and what I did to correct them and how I handled those adversities. And I didn't want to point the finger at anybody because I was the common denominator in all those mistakes. Now, that doesn't mean every single bit of it was my fault, but I wasn't writing the book to point the finger at other people. I was writing the book to take accountability on my part and try, you know, and share what everybody thought the downfall in Green Bay with steroids was really not the case. The downfall in Green Bay was the alcoholism and the drug addiction to painkillers. And nobody saw that because everybody was so focused on the steroid part. So, you know, that was another thing that I wanted to get out to the public to say, hey, look, you know, everybody, you know, including the media and kind of especially the media, because, you know, what they write, people read. And every time, you know, obviously my performance in Green Bay was a disaster, and they were all saying it was, well, because he used steroids in college and now he didn't use steroids in the pros. Well, I used steroids for a total of 5 years in my life, and those were the 5 years at Michigan State. Now, when I get off steroids, I lose about 15% of my strength. Well, if you're benching 600 pounds and you lose 15%, you're still pretty darn strong. So you don't, your play doesn't diminish that significantly. My play diminished in half. And that was because of my, you know, being consumed mentally and emotionally and physically with, you know, alcohol and drugs. So, and people didn't see that. So I felt, look, this is going to tell the truth. And, you know, one of my biggest motivations was, if this helps one person to say, hey, you know what, this is a cautionary tale, I don't want, you know, to do, you know, steroids, or I don't want to, you know, I got to be careful of the drugs or the alcohol, or if a parent reads it and, you know, sits down and talks to the kid and says, look, use this as an example, as a cautionary tale, you know, then it's worth it. And it was, because the feedback that I got was tremendous on, you know, thanks for telling the story, or thanks for, you know, helping me here, or, you know, speaking at schools or speaking at organizations or speaking at treatment centers or, you know, even speaking at corporations about adversity, and how to overcome adversity, you know, when you're in, when it's hitting you dead in the face. So that was the whole motivation for the book. I found it very amusing that there were people out there saying, you know, oh, now he's writing a book because he wants money. And if you want to make money, it's not in writing a book.
I mean, I can attest to that.
You know, so the big publishers, and I'm not going to name any of them, but everybody knows who they are. I sat down with them and they said, look, it's a great story. It's a compelling story. It's a feel-good story, but we need you to tell the whole truth. And I said, well, I'm telling the whole truth, my truth, but I'm not going to sit here and say, hey, look, this doctor did this, or this pharmacist did this, or this player did this, or this trainer did this, or they knew about it, or they didn't know about it, or that was not anybody's business. The business of the book was my accountability. And I didn't want to write a so-called Jose Canseco throw people under the bus book.
I respect that, because you haven't gone that route, that's for sure. Have you talked to the Wisconsin media since your departure there? I mean, I think you of course played with the Colts for a while, and you know, I think you ended up having to face the Packers. Have you talked much to the media about Reflected? Just because we have a Wisconsin audience here, have you kind of reflected on your time with the media in the past?
Well, you know, when the book came out, and it came out in 2009, when the book came out, in that 1 year period, there were a lot of interviews I did with the Wisconsin media, mm-hmm. From all over the state. And, you know, there were some, you know, I would say 90% of them were receptive, very good. There was one radio station in Milwaukee that was very, you know, very hardcore Packer hosts, and I was warned about it, and they said, you know, if you go on the show, that they're going to ask me the tough questions, and I was like, look, I'll answer anything you want, and I'll be honest, and I went on the show, and the guy did attack me, and I answered the questions, and I said, you know, what do you want me to do, and you know, I found it amusing that he said, well, you know, you lied to the Packers and you lied to the NFL about the steroid and drug use. How do we know you're not lying now? And mm-hmm. I said, well, why would I lie about drug addiction? And why would I lie about, you know, being a train wreck in Green Bay? I mean, it just didn't make sense to me. So, you know, it kind of diffused it, and you know, everything he attacked me about, I answered honestly and as gracefully as I could, and I didn't, you know, bark back. I just said, well, look, this was the story. This was the case. And at the end of the day, where I could take a step back, I had an opportunity to play for one of the greatest teams in NFL history. And, I did for 4 years. And I blew it. I shot myself in the foot. And what can I do about it now? Nothing. All I can do about it is try to make things right by, you know, helping people, you know, with the problems that I had and correcting them and carrying that message. You know, Green Bay was nothing but good to me. The fans were great to me. The organization was great to me. You know, a lot of people will focus on the naysayers, or a lot of people will focus on, you know, the fact that it was a horrible, you know, 4 years in Green Bay. But really, you know, that's surprisingly, for me, that's the minority. The majority of the people I still have support from, which surprises me. And I didn't realize it until after I wrote the book and until after I did the interviews and started getting hundreds of emails and, you know, hundreds of letters, like handwritten letters, you know, basically with people expressing, you know, what they felt and basically some, you know, a lot of them saying, look, we're proud of you and you'll always be a Packer. And people make mistakes, and people that acknowledge those mistakes, you know, it takes courage. So, you know, I can say that out of the thousands of letters that I've got and thousands of emails I've got, and you know, it's like, you know, you read it and you're like, hey, well, you know, that person's entitled to their opinion. So, you know, I just filed it under G for garbage.
We're talking to Packers, former Packers offensive lineman Tony Mandrich here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning. Mr. Mandrich, what toll have drugs, both steroids and painkillers, taken on your life? Have they impacted your current quality of life at all?
You know, I would say, I mean, I'm pretty lucky right now. I'll be 48 in September. I have no major health issues. I would say the biggest thing I've noticed in the last 3 years is, you know, a decline in short-term memory. You know, and I think that's due more to football and you know, contact and things like that than it has to do with drugs. But I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm sure the drugs didn't help. But you know, my life sober, you know, now 19 years, have been the best 19 years of my whole life. So, you know, I've been lucky enough to have a great perspective on playing in the NFL as a train wreck and then playing in the NFL sober. And it's obviously a total different perspective, and it's a whole different ball game when you play sober and you know what's going on. But physically and health wise, you know, I really try to stay on top of giving myself the best chance for the best quality of life I can have. And I work out 5 or 6 times a week. You know, my nutrition is an extremely important part of my life, what I put in my body. And that doesn't mean I eat perfect, but, and that doesn't mean I'm, you know, compulsive and obsessive about eating, you know, everything and measuring my food and only eating so much of, you know, this or so much of that. But for the most part, I eat, you know, pretty well. And I know that nutrition, the older I get, the more, I mean, nutrition is important, period. The older you get, the more and more important nutrition is. And so, you know, the quality of life I try to give myself comes through, you know, the nutrition, number one, then staying active and working out, and then obviously keeping your mind active and mentally active and stimulated by doing things that make you think. And, you know, with, you know, my biggest passion being photography and cinematography, always have projects on the table and have projects on the back burner, and I have projects that I'm in the middle of. So things are constantly, you know, going. It's not one of those sit down and coast and feel sorry for myself because my back hurts and my knees hurt and my shoulders hurt. And, you know, every once in a while, you know, it's like my memory's going, hey, wait a second. You know, like 4 or 5 years ago, it used to be, you'd walk into a room and you'd be like, why did I walk in here to get something? Well, you know what? That would happen to me at 29, 30. And that happens to all of us. But then I started noticing in the last 2 or 3 years that there were like things like, I can't remember this person's name, but I know this person. Mm-hmm. And I would literally have to consciously think about, what is this person's name? What is this person's name in my head? And then it would come to me. And it might be a person that I deal with once a week. So, you know, when I noticed that, that's when I started to realize that, okay, well, you know, there obviously is a side effect to, you know, getting your head hit, you know, on a daily basis for, you know, since you were in high school.
Are you part of the NFL's concussion lawsuit?
Well, you know, I was in the beginning, and after 2 months, I took my name off of it because because I felt that I didn't know how much of the drug use played a part in my concussions. So I felt that, you know what, should I be on this? Probably not. I didn't feel right about it.
Mm-hmm.
But then, after they did their settlement, it was like, it didn't matter if your name was on it or not. You were part of it.
Yeah.
And then now they, you know, just came out, I think 2 or 3 or 4 months ago with a painkiller lawsuit,
mm-hmm.
and a class action lawsuit. Now that one I'm a part of because that was, you know, pretty much given freely, to the players. And, you know, it's, even though at the end of the day, you know, you're responsible as a human being or what you put in your body, it was one of those situations where we will do anything to get the product on the field. And there's a lot of pressure there because if you don't do it, you may lose your job. So it's you're kind of like between a rock and a hard place. And if that's your passion, you know, you're like, oh, screw it. I'm going to do it. And I'm going to, play because I don't want the guy that's 5 years younger than me to take my job because I'm so hurt. I can't play. But if I take the painkillers, I'll be fine. So part of that lawsuit, or that class action lawsuit, I am part of, because there should be, you know, more policing and more regulation and more attention to those things. And you know, it's not just the painkillers. the anti-inflammatories that they would give you at, you know, super high doses are so hard on your kidneys and organs. And even though they're non-narcotic, and they, you know, they don't get you high or addicted, but they wreak havoc on your organs. You know, but again, that being said, so else, right? And so, you know, but it's a class action lawsuit that basically is saying, hey, look, you guys were giving painkillers out like candy, and you guys were basically saying we're going to do anything to get you on the field because you are the product and you are the ones that bring the people to the stands, and that's true. But I will also say that we as players have a responsibility that at the end of the day, we still have to take some accountability to say, you know what, I did have a choice to say no. And, you know, and you ask all these players with the concussion lawsuit that are, you know, I mean, I consider my case, you know, I consider my case and I compare my case cases of the extreme ones. Some of the players that have committed suicide, some of the players that, you know, are losing tons of their memory in their late 40s. So I consider myself fairly lucky because I can still do and function and do a lot of things. So you ask yourself, is it worth it? Was it worth it to play? And 99% of those players will say, yes, I would do it again. And I personally would say, yes, I would do it again because it was my passion. It still is my passion. I absolutely love football. I know most teams reported this last week or this week to camp. And, you know, I get excited about that because I know in a month, and in 5 or 6 weeks, football starts on TV and the real football starts, not just preseason. And that is, I mean, the best time of the year. And there's, you know, there's nothing like opening day in the NFL. I don't care. I mean, Major League Baseball, it doesn't compare to opening day in the NFL. And none of the major sports compare to that. It is the best day of the year. And it's, anybody's ever lucky to play in the NFL, it's, you know, they're privileged, it's an honor, it's a phenomenal league, and you know, it's got its flaws. It's a phenomenal marketing machine. I mean, they are phenomenal, but they're also two-faced in a lot of ways on what they let the public see and hear versus what goes on behind the scenes. And, you know, they say they really care, but their actions don't show it.
I'm curious about your opinion on drug testing currently in the NFL. The NFL doesn't currently test for human growth hormone, even though they've agreed to at some point in the future do it. I mean, based on your experience, how many players do you think are currently getting away with using HGH in the NFL?
You know, and this is purely my opinion. I have no proof. Obviously, I've done no studies, and I don't know. I know some players in the NFL. I've never asked them if they do growth hormone. My personal opinion would be that you're going to, I would say somewhere between 30 and 40% are probably using growth hormone. And they're using it for the fact of recovery. It recovers your body a lot quicker. And the analogy would be, you know, if you're 35 or in your early 30s and you have an injury, and if you're 21 and you're just entering the NFL and you have the same injury, that 21-year-old is going to recover a lot quicker because he's younger and he has more growth hormone in his body. Mm-hmm. And he hasn't gone through the wear and tear of another 15 years of football. So when these guys take growth hormone, they're taking it for the motivation of recovering faster, healing faster after surgeries or injuries, so they can get back on the field and make a living. And the NFL is a little bit, you know, kind of, they, at the end of the day, want their product on the field. But in the same sentence, they're saying, well, we're going to test for growth hormone because we don't want it in our league. So it's kind of like, well, you're saying one thing, and you're saying that you're going to test for growth hormone, which you can't test for. And, I mean, there's tests that you can test levels to see. I think one is called, one of the things they test is something called the LG1 or LH1. I think it's LG1. And that measures your production of growth hormone, I believe. And, you know, don't quote me on that. I'm not a doctor. But that's what I believe that they're attempting to test. But then again, people's body chemistries are different. What if some people mature earlier than others? It's kind of like saying, well, you know, you're a sophomore in high school and you haven't even started shaving yet, but the kid in ninth grade got a full beard, right? So it's kind of like, okay, well, body chemistry is different. People mature differently. Well, what if you have a 25-year-old football player who just naturally produces way more growth hormone than the guy next to him? So are we going to suspend him for that? Or, you know, their argument could be, well, let's do a benchmark test for everybody, and we'll get a baseline test for each individual. And then, you know, 6 months later, one of those individuals' growth hormone goes up significantly. Well, what if something happened in his body chemistry-wise, you know, and I'm being devil's advocate, that spiked his growth hormone naturally? So does that mean we should suspend him? See, they don't know enough about it, and that's why they're not testing for it. But the marketing machine, which is phenomenal, the NFL, is letting the public know, we're going to test for it, or we are testing for it, or we're in the progress of testing for it. This has been going on for a few years now. And they're not doing anything. You know, it's an interesting thing to see as a perspective from somebody that used to play the game, that at the end of the day, you know, the commissioner works for 32 owners and you know, 31 owners, and then, you know, obviously the Green Bay Packers, the way that ownership is organized. But you can say 32 owners. He has to answer to those 32 owners collectively. So those 32 owners say, this is how we take our stance on this topic. So when Roger Goodell talks, he is basically representing the owners. It's not his opinion. It's the owner's opinion, because his check is written by the owners. So he is more or less a puppet. And when he says something, it's the owners talking. And when they say that they care about the players in the NFL, it's bullshit. Because if they cared about the players in the NFL, they wouldn't give money settlements. They would give health insurance. Because everybody's saying, well, the class action suit with painkillers, the class action lawsuit with concussions, it's all money grab. The players don't care about the money. The players care about health insurance. They want, you know, when they have a major issue, and you don't have a major issue 1 or 2 or 3 years after you retire. You start to have major issues 14, 15, 20 years after you retire. And you don't have health insurance. I mean, or if you do have health insurance, you're paying for it, and you're paying significantly for it because of your history. And so, you know, why don't they give us health insurance if they care that much? I don't want the money. I don't want cash. I don't want a check. I don't want health insurance. So, you know, again, that's the part that, and obviously you can tell because I feel very strongly about it, that the part that irritates me is when they say they care, they really don't.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, it's a business, and I get it. It's a business. It's no different than if one of those owners owned Ford Motor Company. It's a business. They want to make revenue. They have a passion for what they do. They love the sport. But at the end of the day, it's about winning the Super Bowl. It's about making revenue. It's about, you know, marketing. It's about business. And when you're done with your services and you can't help us anymore, have a nice life.
Yeah. Mr. Mandrich, I've kept you here for a long time. I suppose it's good this is a podcast and we have the ability to talk long form here and no commercial breaks or anything. Do you pay attention to the current Packers team or anything in the NFL? Do you have any thoughts on the current Packers team, their chances this season?
You know, I do pay attention. Not as deeply as I used to. Obviously, the two teams that I pull for constantly are the Pack and the Colts. I have a very good friend, James Campen, who's the offensive line coach in Green Bay, who I played with in Green Bay. Like I said earlier, the Packer organization was nothing but great to me, and I was the one that was sabotaging myself. Football is a huge passion of mine. Obviously, I can't play it anymore, but I'm glued to the TV, and now as a fan, fantastic. I mean, you have football on Thursday, you have football on Sunday, you have football on Sunday night, you have football on Monday. I mean, it's a dream. You know, if you're a football fan. So I do follow the Packers and I do follow the Colts. I think if you have Aaron Rodgers as a quarterback, you always have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
The guy is one of the best in the NFL and maybe the best right now in the NFL. Like Peyton Manning, in my opinion, maybe the best ever. And even though he set some incredible records last year, realistically, he's on the tail end of his career. He still got some great years left, and he could still win a Super Bowl. But I would say right now your best guy is probably Aaron Rodgers. And, when you have people like Matthews on defense and the way that organization is coached with discipline, they play with a purpose. And they play with discipline and I think, of course I think they have a chance. Do I follow every draft pick that they had and stuff? I couldn't tell you who their first round draft pick was this year, but I follow them when I watch TV on Sundays.
Yeah.
And things like that. So I wear, my Packer, hat or shirt or whatever when it's football season, because I support them. So in that respect, yeah, I'm a huge fan. Am I obsessed about it like I was 25 years ago? No, because my life is too busy with other goals and dreams that I want to fulfill.
That leads me into last question here before we let you go. Any current projects you're working on? You talked about, you do photography, cinema photography now. Anything we should be looking for? Any magazine spreads with photography by Tony Mandrich coming up?
Well, I'm doing. I just finished filming a documentary on a bodybuilder here in Phoenix, who he's not just known nationally but internationally, and it's a great story, and it's probably gonna take another. It'll probably come out on DVD and whatever format we put it out on in the next 8 to 12 weeks.
Okay.
If somebody's interested in bodybuilding, it's interesting because I would say only 25% of that documentary takes place in the weight room. So it's because that would get boring. So it shows so much behind the scenes stuff of what it takes to compete at a national level in that sport. And then you know, the biggest, and that's, you know, a cinematography thing. And the you know, the biggest passion of everything is photography and composite photography. So, I do a lot of commercial advertising photography and sports stuff. So I'll do projects. And right now, like in the last few months, I did a series, and I just called it the Violin Project. And it's a model that's an athlete, and she plays the violin, she plays piano, she's very talented musically, but she also is a black belt in two or three martial arts. And so we've done pictures of her kind of showing all the different aspects of her life. So, you know, it's kind of like a series of her. And that's what I like to do a lot of. And I shoot a lot of athletes, you know, everything from high school to pro athletes. And I find it more interesting to shoot the athletes that are not pros, because you don't have to deal with the egos. And I know that firsthand because I have one of the biggest egos. And I can't imagine how difficult I was to deal with. But it's the amateur athletes, whether they're college or you know, whatever level they're at, that are the funnest to shoot, because the images and the composition that you can pull out of them is fun. And you know, I always want to make jaw-dropping images and make people go, wow. I mean, that, you know, I can't believe that's me. Or and I think in a, you know, my disadvantage is the great photographers in the world have been doing it since, you know, they were late teens, or they've been doing it for 30 years or 40 years. So, you know, my disadvantage is that most of my adult life was in sport. My advantage is that in the shop,
Are you still there, Mr.
yeah.
Man? I lost you for
Yeah,
one
I'm still,
second. I lost you for a second. Go ahead.
yeah. But the no, I was just saying, the advantage that I have with the sports part is I was behind the scenes when I played, right? You're in the locker room, so you know a lot of what goes on back there, and you can kind of translate that stuff into photography and say, this is how it really is. This is what it really looks like. And you capture that, and a lot of people don't see that, and they appreciate it.
Well, by all means, please, you have my contact information. If you have any like YouTube preview clips or trailers or anything, pass them along. We'll post them at our website at cheeseheadtv.com. We'd love to be able to promote that for you. But thank you so much for taking the better part of a half hour for talking to us this morning. Appreciate your time, especially so early, and thanks a lot.
No, it's my pleasure, and I know the Packers are going to have a great season, and I look forward to it.
Thanks a lot. Tony Mandrich.
Thanks.
Yep. Tony Mandrich, former Packers offensive lineman, second overall draft choice in 1989, being very candid about his past with us here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central. Thank you everybody so much who tuned in to listen to this interview and listen to the whole show for that matter. Basically got an hour long show today. Normally we're a half hour long show, but hey, that's great as well. So we're glad we could provide it to you. I always end the show with a little bit of a call to action, and what I'll do once again is, by all means, if you have not yet, and thank you to those who have, but if you have not yet, please give us a rating on iTunes. Go, I mean, I realize that's probably a method a lot of people use to listen to podcasts. We really do appreciate if you can go out, give us a rating, give a comment, you know, in exchange for free, three times a week, a free podcast here at Cheesehead TV. Kind of the pay, you know, whereas a lot of people have paywalls and subscriptions, we don't have that here at Cheesehead TV. Everything's free. this is your payment. Just do us a little favor. Give us a rating. Tell us if you like it. Hope you enjoyed the interview today with Tony Mandarich. But that'll do it. Sorry we didn't really get into the backup offensive linemen too much today on our offensive line preview day. But next episode, Friday, we'll get into the defensive line a little bit. I have joining me on the show Scott McKenna, Packers blogger from the Packers blog Talkin' Smack. He's going to join us on Friday, kind of preview family night as well, coming up this weekend. So excited for that. Join us then every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time here at CheeseheadTV.com. Of course, podcast as well. On behalf of Jamie Snowden, I'm Brian Kirby. We'll see you later, folks. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned to CheeseheadTV.com all week long for all your news needs as well. I leave you today with a song called Hard Livin' by Railroad Earth on Psy Fidelity Records. Go Pack, go.